Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am your host, Tyler Fortescue. With me, as always, is Fred. He is not Dave Meltzer Moreland. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. You doing well yourself?
You know what? Things could be a little better, but Eclair's not suffering anymore. So I miss her, but I'm glad she's okay. So that's important. Other than that, yeah, things are good. It's just my busy season. I've got high school football from the state of Texas going on in the background right now. Anna is playing Tyler Chapel Hill for the Division Four or Class Four Division One title, and it's fun, man.
How many divisions do they have?
Okay, so they have six divisions.
Okay,
and Class 1A is. Just six-man football because, you know, you get a lot of, like, really small towns. And then everything else is 11-man. But there's so many high schools and teams that each class has two divisions. And the way they separate it is each district gets four teams make the playoffs. The schools with the top two enrollments go to class – or the Division One, and the schools with the bottom two enrollments go to Division Two. So they split it up that way. Which it was really weird for coming from Minnesota and where everybody makes the playoffs. But I mean, it's Texas. It's a little different and they take things a little more seriously there. So, it's a pretty cool little gimmick. And the games have been really good so far.
Awesome. Awesome. Do you know if anyone has gone into or onto NFL success from the six-man realm of Texas?
Six-man, I'll be honest, I don't know.
Just curious if you knew.
Oh, the Von Erichs just popped up as I'm getting all caught up on the Dynamite from Wednesday. We got tickets to an Arboretum light gimmick. It was kind of cool.
Well, let's go ahead and get through the news. And I guess the big story this week, as stupid as it kind of is, revelation that Warner Brothers Discovery had talks with WWE this week. Dave Meltzer, I believe, primarily speculated that door may have opened because of CM Punk going to WWE. One Bill Phil, as we all know. AEW's deal is through the end of 2024. And, you know, the whole deal with AEW has been that, you know, Tony Khan has been extremely loyal to Warner Brothers Discovery since the start, to the point that it's led to speculation, which hasn't been denied, that Warner Brothers Discovery owns some percentage, non-controlling percentage of AEW. A big part of this was that something that Tony Khan confirmed in the press call before the Ring of Honor show Final Battle that is taking place on the day that we record this, December 15th. Basically, the CW expressed interest in Ring of Honor, putting it on their network, but Tony Khan decided to stay loyal to Warner Brothers Discovery. Tony also said during the Final Battle media call that they met with Warner Brothers Discovery to discuss extending the TV deal this week on Tuesday. So I'm not terribly surprised that Warner Brothers Discovery is kicking the tires a little bit. It seems like what you probably should be doing in their situation when it comes to WWE, to be clear. And I don't know. I think that we, you know, collectively, the wrestling media and landscape still has PTSD from WCW. The idea, I think, that with what AEW has done as far as ratings goes, and that they would be unable to get, you know, if Warner Brothers Discovery decided to not go with them, it seems beyond the veil that they would not get a deal somewhere else of some value, you know, of decent value, even a potentially profitable value. But there was a lot of speculation that AEW is going to die now, just because anytime anything happens that is not fantastic for the company, it kind of feels like that's how the discourse goes. I don't know. This is definitely a wait and see situation. I certainly wouldn't get overly worried about it as a general thing for AEW's future, though.
No, I do want to push back a little bit here. I actually think that Tony was asked about the partial ownership of Warner Brothers Discovery, and didn't he say no? That they don't own any of the company? Or am I Nelson Mandela affecting this?
I believe that what he said, and again, this is off what I remember primarily is Meltzer talking about this, is that he didn't deny it outright. That's what I got.
Okay. Yeah. The whole Warner Brothers Discovery thing, as far as television deals, look, my guess is that AEW is locked into a contract where they can't negotiate with anybody else until after a certain point. And the one date that I saw speculative is the 1st of January of 2024, which means that then you have less than 1 year at that point remaining on the contract. And that at that point, AEW can shop around, which I think is pretty standard practice when it comes to television deals. Anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, but if you have that amount of time, that gives you time to negotiate, one, in good faith with the company that you're already working. And you probably have already had those conversations going in before this window opens. But two, you have to have a plan set in stone, and you have to be able to let your viewers know, hey, we're going here. You don't want to have an Impact Ustream deal where you have to air it on like streaming for months at a time while you're transitioning over to Spike TV. You can't have that. They got away with it in 2004. It almost killed them. But you cannot have that happen to you now. You just can't. You will die. And it will be very bad for business. So having that negotiating window is important. It's pivotal to the future success of AEW. And until we kind of figure out some of those little nuances and what's real and what's not, especially with WWE having conversations with Warner Brothers Discovery, a conversation doesn't mean anything unless there's like real hardcore negotiations or things are getting close. Why? You and I can have conversations about bringing AEW television to our streaming platform, my YouTube channel with almost 1,700 subscribers. That doesn't mean it goes anywhere. That's a little bit of hyperbole, but you kind of understand. Exploratory discussions and having talks are completely different from hardcore negotiations. And right now, we don't have any concrete information saying that WWE is having like real negotiations with Warner Brothers Discovery. It sounds like just it's exploratory talks, which are it's normal in the process. You have the talks, you kind of see where everybody is at. You kind of see where the comfort level is for both sides. And then you sit down at the negotiating table because you have an idea of what both sides want from this arrangement. And then you can go in there and hopefully not insult the other party with those initial offers, because that's key too. You don't want to go in there and be like, hey, I want $400 million a year for this product that's never made more than $201. Well, that's insulting, because we're going to offer you $175. And that's how negotiations can go really poorly. So talks are fine. And obviously, with the CM Punk connection, it would not be shocking if Punk was the one who kind of started introducing some of the parties, because it seems like Nick Khan had had discussions already with Warner Brothers Discovery. But from my understanding, the people that they're now having discussions with, like Mark Spiro, Triple H, the people at Warner Brothers Discovery are different people. And that matters, because there are a lot of people in a major company like that that have say in these things. And being able to get in front of the right people means a lot. So until we get more information, I'm not really going to be super concerned about it.
Yeah, it's definitely just a situation to keep an eye on right now. It's going to take time, and it's going to take... there's just a lot to shake loose here, because the Warner Brothers Discovery also has the rights to the NBA right now, which is a bigger rating deal than AEW, of course. And those are coming up for negotiation, I believe, this year as well. And I think it's important to note, or I have to think, I guess I should say, that it's entirely likely that those, we have to wait for the NBA domino to fall first. Could be wrong, could go the other way around, but it just feels like everything will be dictated by exactly how much money the NBA gets, because David Zaslav, Warner Bros. Discovery, they kept, or he has made public statements about how they don't need the NBA. Now the question is that just, you know, is that posturing to try to drive their price down and to get more leverage against them? Or is that a genuine, you know, strategy he is taking, given that he has taken multiple completely finished movies and just dumped them in the trash and decided to be better to take a tax cut than to release them and have them potentially flop, which is, you know, not great.
Did you hear what happened with the, I think it was the Last of Us?
No, I did not.
Apparently Naughty Dog said no. And after 4 years of trying to make it like multiplayer, I guess they're just doing a remaster now.
Okay.
Which, what the hell? That's a good way to piss off gamers.
Well, they all clearly they don't care. So anyways, yeah, so that's where we are with everything. It's not possible that WWE will go there. I don't think it's the most likely destination. But it's on the table, so that's about what you would expect. Light week for news, so we'll just go ahead and get through the rest. Ratings for Dynamite, I was stupidly did not recall or remember to put in the Collision ratings, but Dynamite this past week was at 845,000 viewers overall at a 0.30 in the key demo, which is the highest demo since late October, basically before the start of the NBA. Wild how wrestling drew in the highest rating of the past few months. Per WrestleTix, World's End is up to 7,276 tickets distributed, so it looks like that'll be pretty successful. Of course, that is being held, I believe, at Long Island, if I'm not mistaken. Some quick hitters. Thunder Rosa said she is ready to return, so hopefully she'll be able to provide a boost to the women's division that has had an awful year. Jim Ross has said that he's hoping to return by World's End. Athena Broker knows, and she is still going to be working the show. She, of course, is in the final battle show, I should say. She is, of course, in the main event, and we'll get to talk about that show here in a second. But last news note, Dave Meltzer thinks that Andrade's contract is up soon, but it could be have its time extended by you know, adding time on after injury, as is common in AEW and WWE. Any thoughts on all those there, Tyler?
I want to see Thunder Rosa back. I want to see her just beat the ever-living piss out of some of these women in the division. And like, I don't mean that in a bullying sort of way or more backstage drama. I just want stiff work in this division. And that is exactly what Thunder Rosa is going to bring. And I hope that it works out this time. I really do, because she's very talented. But we know that that's not all encompassing when it comes to talking about these things.
Yeah, she's definitely better than some of the other people they've been relying on recently, and I think you know, she could provide some help for sure. Let's see. Okay, so that's about it. I mean, I'm happy that Jim Ross is getting healthy, and I'm sure Athena will be able to work through that broken nose just fine. So let's talk about briefly, because I'm not watching the weekly show, Final Battle. It is coming up tonight. You have to get the Honor Club gimmick to be able to watch it. It's not even on pay-per-view now, which I think is a very interesting move. There's two ways you can interpret that. One is a way to try to shore up subscription numbers to the Honor Club service, which I'm sure has fallen off hard. It really feels like that show has no buzz right now. I can't imagine they're drawing in too many viewers right now. Alternatively, you could look at it as, in another negative way, that they expect this to do so poorly on pay-per-view, they're not even going to bother. And I think either way you look at it, it's not really great. But I just don't get what Tony Khan is doing with Ring of Honor. It just feels like a show that's like basically a phantom limb, and isn't really serving any great purpose.
They need to give Ring of Honor to somebody else. Give it to Bryan Danielson.
Sure.
Just let him run Ring of Honor. Let him just use that as his little playground, for lack of a better term. And let him just have fun, like, because he keeps talking about how this is his last year as a full-time wrestler because of his kids. Well, you can do a lot of stuff from home when you're the booker. You can do a lot. Yep. And I think that would be a great use of his time. I think that would be a great use of Bryan Danielson's expertise and his wrestling mind. I really do. I think it's great. But we'll kind of see how that all manifests.
Yeah, so let's run through the card, because on paper, I think it's actually turned out to be pretty good. But, you know, we have 9 matches in totality announced, including the pre-show match. Now, this card is taking place in Garland, Texas, the cursed Curtis Colwell event. And I think extremely notably, it doesn't have a Ring of Honor World Championship match, of course, because of the Triple Crown thing they're doing for the C2. Congratulations, Tyler. I think you may be the new head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers.
Woo!
I apologize for you having to do that. Just saw that news as I went to go check the ticket sales of the of Final Battle, which I am still working on. But since they are in Texas and Garland, they are going to do a Von Erichs match. Marshall and Ross Von Erich, accompanied by Kevin Von Erich, will be facing, I think, possibly the best possible opponents for this match, for their match, the Outrunners, Turbo Floyd and Truth Magnum.
That match rules, man.
It kind of does, yeah. I have actually never watched Marshall and Ross work, so I don't know if they're like what they're good at or anything. But it is, that is some extremely world class championship shit right there to me. But hopefully it's good. We'll see how it goes. But that is the pre-show match. What are your thoughts on that one?
I love the match, man. I'm very curious to see what kind of a draw Kevin Von Erich is. I understand it's in Texas. The Curtis Colwell Center's in Garland, which I believe is about 20 miles or so outside of Dallas proper. I may be a little bit off on my geography, but I think that's about right. And obviously, we know the Von Erichs, which is a massive draw at the Sportatorium in Houston. I just don't know what kind of a draw Kevin Von Erich is. I don't believe his kids are any form of legit draw unless you just see, oh, Von Erich, I should go to that show. But then again, you're also putting him on the pre-show. So the match itself is cool. I can't remember what you said the other team name was.
The Outrunners.
I always forget what their name is, because I just remember Turbo Floyd. And I'm like,
that's
Turbo
a fantastic, Floyd just, that's such a great,
such a great pro wrestling name.
It's extremely good, man.
The Outrunners rule, and I'm excited to kind of see them in a different different situation. They're in a situation where they're not jobbers. They're in a situation where they can actually work. And I think that is really cool. So I'm excited to kind of see what that looks like. And great pre-show match. This is the kind of stuff Ring of Honor should be doing all the time, 24/7. Just stuff like this. The Von Erichs, they need work. Like MLW had them almost exclusively in multi-man matches where, like, tornado style. Like, get them in a position where they can work with seasoned vets as an actual like tag team and not just doing stuff.
Yeah.
I think this is awesome.
Yeah. Now, as far as the Von Erichs being a draw, well, the last public update from WrestleTix is from Wednesday, where they posted that they have distributed a total of 2,253 tickets for Final Battle, with another 1,469 left available. Last time AEW was there was for Dynamite last year, where they drew just under 5,000. So I wouldn't expect that number to be too close to the AEW number last year, because it is Ring of Honor, and Ring of Honor is spectacularly cold. But it's not great to have less than 2,500, I think. Its capacity is listed on Wikipedia as about 6,800. So about 1/3, you know, full. So, yeah. Ring of Honor.
I know. Ring of Honor needs something different.
Yeah, because what they're doing with it right now just does not have any buzz. The rest of the card, we have Tom Lawler facing Wheeler Utah for the ROH Peer Championship, which actually I'm pretty hyped for that. I think that could be really good. Ethan Page and Tony Nese face off in an I Quit match. We get Black Taurus challenging El Hijo Del Vikingo for the AAA Mega Championship, which could easily be the match of the night. The six-man tag belts are on the line with the Mighty Don't Kneels, Shane Haste, Kosei Fujita, and Bad Dude Tito.
Hell yeah, Bad Dude Tito, let's go.
Challenging the Mogul Embassy. We got a beef off with Keith Lee against Shane Taylor. Survival of the Fittest Finals for the vacant TV championship is a six-man with Dalton Castle, Commander, Kyle Fletcher, Lee Johnson, Lee Moriarty, and a mystery man. A Jay Briscoe Memorial Fight Without Honor between FTR and Mark Briscoe against the Blackpool Combat Club's Brian Danielson, John Moxley, and Claudio Castagnoli. And finally, we have Billy Starks challenging Athena for the Women's World Championship. That is actually a pretty good card on paper, even if I can honestly say I've watched very little of the build.
Yeah, I'll say this. I'm really excited about that Billy Starks Athena match, not because I think Billy Starks is winning it, but because I think it's good that you have a legit pathway to get her these type of matches, and it doesn't feel forced. It's been a natural, well-progressed build. And she's 18 years old. She's getting a potential main event spot on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It rocks.
And also, I think that she should win the title off Athena. And I think it's most likely that's what's going to happen. I don't know what Athena has left to do in Ring of Honor. And they could definitely use her on the main roster. So I don't see why you would not put it on Starks.
I get why you're saying it. I think your rationale makes sense. I still think it's too early to put it on Starks. And I feel like she should be a chaser. I don't see it being a... I don't know what the right word is. Like, what's her title reign going to be? She's not ready for it. And
they don't have a better option.
Prepared, no,
at least right now. They won't heat anyone else up to this level. I mean, this is a months-long storyline that they're paying off here. So, you know, I mean, I don't really see an obvious alternative.
Yeah. Look, more often than not, I want to give Tony Khan the benefit of the doubt when it comes to these things. And I want to see where things go. And I've been very consistent about that. Khan has, for the most part, earned our trust when it comes to what's going on within his companies. Billy Starks as your champion just feels weird at this point, maybe in a year or two. But if they do it, I'm willing to wait it out and kind of see what happens.
Now, I will say that when she wins it, I don't think it has to be a long title run. She could lose it on the next episode, and I wouldn't think much of it, you know. I think that it's kind of easy to think that every first title win needs to be some massive months-long thing, and it really doesn't need to.
No, and that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that.
No, I'm not saying you are either, to be clear.
I'm not saying
a general commentary.
Yeah, it's more, I don't think Starks is ready for the spot. I think she's got an incredibly bright future, and we've talked about that on the show. I don't think that future is now. She kind of needs to be treated like Nick Wayne a little bit. Like, give her opportunities to wrestle with really good individuals in the ring. Let her grow organically. And I don't see putting the title on her being the best route for that growth. I will keep an open mind, and I'm willing to be proven wrong. But that's kind of how I see it right now.
That's fair. That's fair. I guess I would counter with it. It's Ring of Honor, you know. I don't think it really matters that much. In fact, this might actually be a great spot for her to be a champion and get some experience. But
very fair.
Reasonable minds can disagree, as Joe Lanza likes to say.
Today I learned you had a reasonable mind.
Doctors are still out on that. any other thoughts on this card?
Look, Tony Khan pay-per-views deliver. And it's not the strongest card, but it's a fun card. And I think it's worth the time. I really do.
There's nothing on this card that I would expect to not hit, you know, with sufficient time, 3.5 stars. I guess the weakest match on here on paper is probably Ethan Page and Tony Nese in an I Quit match. But, like, I think they're both very good. I think Ethan Page is, like, possibly the, you know, the most underachieving guy in wrestling, just in terms of like some of the tools he has. I find him very frustrating, but we'll get to the good part of him later when we talk about Collision. I think this could be a pretty damn good show. I'm not expecting like show of the year. I don't think anything will really hit like flirt with 5 stars necessarily, though maybe that 6-man will. Maybe Taurus and Vikingo will just have like the best possible match they could have. I mean, it's pretty, I don't know. I'm excited to watch this. I don't know if I'll watch it live, but I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah. I will be watching it at some point this weekend. Texas high school football is going on right now. So we got, one after this game that is going on right now as we're recording between Anna and Tyler Chapel Hill. We have 5 more games to decide state champions in the state of Texas. I don't even live in Texas. I'm just watching it because I just love high school football.
Yeah. Let's talk about the shows this past week. This may have been, Tyler, the best week of AEW television in a long time. I'm going to start off with Rampage, which it was the weakest of the three, as you would expect from a Rampage, but nothing on it was bad. I actually, you know, everything on it was enjoyable. I think Orange Cassidy's match was actually a disappointment with Angelico, just because Orange Cassidy's had a great year. And that was, to me, like, just kind of a fine above average match, but nothing special. I certainly wouldn't recommend anyone go out of their way to watch it. But immediately after that, you know, it was quite short, but I actually thought Trish Adora and Abaddon had, like, an average match, and considering where I was on Abaddon the last time she got regular TV time, which has been quite a while, I think she has improved. I'm not going to call her like, Manami Toyota or anything. Utami Hayashishita is not walking through these doors, but she's turned into a decent wrestler, which I think is good for her. It's an accomplishment because I don't think she was the last time she was getting any meaningful TV time.
Well, considering where she was when she debuted with the company, she was just a zombie. And now she's becoming a good worker. That's awesome.
I wouldn't go good, but I would go solid. You know, I would go acceptable. She's not sticking out as like, oh, she doesn't belong here. So good for her. And, you know, if she can keep continuing to improve, that would be great. I guess I think I've been using the wrong pronouns. I apologize for that. I think they prefer non-binary, actually. Now I stop and think about it. But I think they've improved noticeably. To get from bad to fine is a step up for sure. And I don't know. We'll see how this Julia Hart match goes. I'm not like hyped about it, but I do think those two could surprise. I assume that'll be on the World's End show. And we'll see. It'll be interesting to watch, if nothing else. But I do think the gimmick shift for Abaddon has worked. And I think that their abilities are better. You know, they're on a higher level than they were.
That's always good. I just want to say, as I have the replay of Dynamite going on in the background, firm reminder that Jay Lethal has the best creative moveset of all time. Dude's moveset rules. I just wish he was better than just what Jay Lethal is.
Yeah, especially Jay Lethal in 2023. But we'll get to that in a little bit. The rest of Rampage, I mean, there was the Hobbs and Takeshita against the Masai Dao and Daniels match, which was fine. But then we had ourselves a damn good Bryan Danielson-Daniel Garcia match as part of the C2 and the Continental Classic. And I liked this match a lot. I went 4.5 stars on it. I thought, you know, this is the fact that Daniel Garcia kind of stuck out this year is a damn shame because, you know, at the end of last year, he was showing some real promise. I think he's a very good in-ring guy. I think he's got some solid personality. And I think this match really showed that he can be something special. And I think this is part of what's showing the C2 is turning into like really something special, because I do think there's several storylines coming out of this that are going to be very intriguing if they can follow up on them properly. And one of them is Daniel Garcia. You know, he's coming out of the JAS. He's, you know, the whole I'm an entertainer, not a wrestler thing. Comes out in his trunks instead of his, you know, JAS pants, his long leather pants that he was losing matches and having them blamed on back at the start of the year. And this match whooped ass. And Daniel Garcia is really good. It's a shame that he kind of just fell off the radar for a few months there. So if they can actually, if Tony Khan actually puts his foot on the gas, which he should with this guy, at least can it make him a TV regular, you know, he could really step it up in the next year.
Yeah. The one part about Garcia is he's stupid young. It feels like he's been around for a long time, but he just started at like at 18. So yeah. I think he's 24.
That sounds right, but I am double checking you. Wikipedia does not list an age, but that sounds about right to me.
Yeah, and the two numbers that are popping out to me, 24 and 26, either one, like he could
cage match says 25, so split the difference.
He could not have a world title win for 5 years, and he's in his prime at that point.
Yeah,
like, we're in a good spot with where things are with Daniel Garcia, and I think this is great.
Yeah, on my top wrestlers of the year list, you know, which is based entirely off of you know, match quality and match quantity, I've got him 73rd on the year between Ricky Doi and Kevin Owens, so nothing wrong with that. But I do think he could definitely finish in the top 50 if given the opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. Get this guy more ring time, and the fact that he went from pants to trunks, obviously with the story they're kind of telling, is a great sign.
Maybe he'll feud with was it Okada that famously went back to trunks at one point a few years ago?
Oh, when he had like the robe,
revealed the trunks. Kingdom.
Yeah, because the second he walked out, I'm like, and I saw the robe, I'm like, trunks. He's doing the trunks, and then he pulled him off, and he got one of the biggest pops I've ever heard.
Yeah,
in the Tokyo Dome.
It was like huge pop.
Okada's here to fucking wrestle, baby. Let's go. And then, yes, Jay White just beats him. It's like, whoa, okay. Just great stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So that's it for Rampage. Going on to Collision. I'm going to start out this off with the negative. Mercedes Martinez and Willow Nightingale, they had a fine match. It wasn't a bad match, but it had what is currently my least favorite finish in wrestling right now, which is where the person that is going to win the match takes several big moves in a row, like just absolutely eat shit for a while. And then they just get a roll up on a cover immediately. They don't come back with any offense. They just pop a crucifix on someone that is currently covering them, and they get the three. And in this is what happened in this match with Martinez in a row hit an exploder suplex and then like a splash mountain, but where she flipped Willow around and out of the razor's edge position, and so she landed on her face. And immediately after that, Willow Nightingale just grabbed a small package and got three. And that was the end of the match. And it's like, she just got murdered. You know, can we not like have her sell a little bit and then have her come back? And I've been seeing this spot all over the place. I just saw it in Dragon Gate like the next day from like an October show, I think it was. I forget exactly who it was now. But it's just kind of like, if you just get, you know, like murdered by a move, you shouldn't immediately be grabbing a roll up off of that and getting the pin. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. I very rarely yell about like that kind of aspect of wrestling, but this killed me. This really did kill me.
Fred, as somebody who almost died, I don't want you to die. Stay with us.
Yeah. I try to stay towards the light, but you know, sometimes this happens to me and I'm like, oh God, maybe I should go. I don't know.
That's what happens when you watch WWE. Don't do that anymore, please.
But on this show, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff on this show. We had ourselves Claudio against Eddie Kingston, which is always a great time. And that was a great match. I went 4.5 on that. They just whooped each other's ass. There was a better than expected because, you know, Ethan Page in general, I think, has been kind of a disappointment in AEW, just very inconsistent. But he had a damn good match with Kenny Omega. Now, he should have. If you're a professional wrestler, you should be having a good match with Kenny Omega.
It helps, even though neither one of them was from the province of Quebec.
Yeah, they were invested.
Yeah, they were invested. They cared because they're in their home country. And
yeah, they had a Canada off.
I don't know if like you know how like when the Olympics come around, everybody's like, oh yeah, Team America, let's go. Like, but when it comes to like wrestlers and stuff, when wrestlers come to your state, when Top Flight came to Minnesota, they got a huge pop in the building because they're one of us. And I'm curious, and anybody who lives in Canada, if you can shed some light, I'm very interested in hearing, but how that matters from like Canada as a whole versus province to province, because you had that match going on in Quebec when both Christian Cage and Adam Copeland are from the Toronto area in Ontario. How does that manifest itself? Is it still, oh, awesome, they're Canadian, or is it just not quite the same and they need to be from like the same province or area? And I'm fascinated to know because neither one of these guys were from close to Quebec.
Yeah. But it seems like that they, you know, the crowd bought into it, you know, that as they were honorary hometown guys, they didn't seem to have an issue with it. I would say this match was much heated than you would get in Carlin, Texas, just as an example, the Page Omega match. And I think that goes for Copeland Christian too. Speaking of Canada, I actually just saw this on the Athletic this morning, but apparently there has been two notable flubs of O Canada the past week by people singing before NHL games. One guy botched the lyrics and sang the same line twice. But then there was another guy at Long Island for the Islanders game who basically did the national anthem in 59 seconds. Like, he speed ran O Canada, and a bunch of people were upset about it online. And I guess there were two other issues. or in, you know, past in March, some guy like forgot the lyrics halfway through because he was given 2 hours to learn them because he was a last minute replacement. And then in November, another singer in America botched the lyrics. So, yeah. Whoops.
I love it. I love it. Just speed running. Oh, Canada.
Yeah.
Of all places, a hockey game.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know. For those who don't know, no matter where they're playing, if there's a U.S. team playing, the United States national anthem will play. If there's a Canadian team playing, the Canadian team national anthem will play. So if you have one of each, both do get played. And God, this is great.
There's no guarantee as to the quality, though.
Nope. Odie agrees as he stretches like, oh, I can't believe it.
So going on, 2.0, which I think has been very disappointing in the ring, they had a good but not notably good match with Commander and Pinto Azero, or Pentagon Jr. There was a couple mix-ups here that kept it from really getting to a higher level, but it wasn't bad. And then we had the fantastic Andrade versus Bryan Danielson match where Bryan Danielson worked everyone by selling again. Everyone thought that he was injured because Andrade targeted his eye and there was some bleeding involved. And
breaking news, Bryan Danielson takes an injury and turns it into a story.
Yeah, never seen
more
seen
at before. 11.
Bryan Danielson, notoriously good seller. Like, man, it was just very funny that everyone got on Twitter Tuesday night and were like, oh my God, he died. And then he just comes out on Wednesday fine. So,
wasn't it on this collision that Nigel McGuinness had a like Free the Clams shirt or something like that?
Yes, something along those lines. And then, in true like Bobby Heenan fashion, right before this, or as they were doing the entrances, it's the most basic joke, but you know, he's really leaned into doing this gimmick. Nigel goes, you know, Bryan Danielson's my second favorite guy in this tournament. And I think of the Ski of Own who responded, yeah, who's your first? And he goes, everybody else. I'm just like, good just shit.
Phenomenal.
I do think Nigel has really found his rhythm, which is nice because early on it was like, oh, you're not ready. You're not fitting in here. But yeah, I mean, that match ruled all the championship continental, the C2 matches. They've all been very good. Continental Classic. I'm forgetting words here. We had ourselves a great Jon Moxley pre-tape promo on the show as well. When he was hyping the Swerve match, Jon Moxley just is a otherworldly promo at this point in time. I don't really have anything too negative to say about anything else on here. I think probably the second worst thing on Collision was maybe the Julia Hart promo on Abaddon, which is just a little pre-tape, and it wasn't bad, it just wasn't special, and that's okay. So
sometimes when you're as young as Julia Hart, just hitting your marks and getting it out, it's okay for right now.
Yeah, it was fine. I don't really have a complaint about it. It just was not spectacular. She's not a spectacular promo yet. She has potential. I can see her getting there. She's got a good delivery now. She's very at ease with doing, you know, the spooky bullshit. So we get the Dynamite. You know, I thought we had a really interesting open to this show. So let's talk about this a little bit in depth. Samoa Joe came out and started doing what felt like, honestly, a very WWE-ified promo. Not a bad thing in this case, just felt very much ripped from, you know, a Raw from a few years ago. So he talked about how MJF was killed in the back and how, you know, they're doing a whole mystery angle about who the devil is, which, gasp, Sean Ross Sapp said to expect to be revealed at World's End, which I fucking hope so.
God, please reveal that shit.
As the crowd goes mild. I mean, you know, I actually like this open to the show. I am going to put this over here. I will put a caveat at the end of it. But Samoa Joe is a fantastic promo. And so He said he saw that there was a certain beer bottle there that a cowboy likes to drink, and he also smelled, in my favorite line of the night, Stetson and disappointment.
Oh, God, I forgot about that line. Phenomenal.
Fantastic. Said he went looking for Hangman, but he couldn't find him. So whose music should hit and come out but Hangman Page?
I love that music.
It's a great theme. So he comes out and, you know, he's like, I don't care about these games you're playing, the bromance, or this game of Clue you're playing. And then Samoa Joe had another good line, another great line, really, where he said that he didn't come out here as a detective. He came out here as an executioner. And at this point in the show, I love this segment up to this point. And then Roddy Strong came out and, you know, we're doing this whole restore the feeling thing on Twitter, right? You know, all this shit with Daniel Garcia tweeting it and MJF, who ruined the feeling in the first place, unfortunately, tweeting it. And it's like, buddy, you don't get to do this. This ain't you. So Roderick Strong comes out and does the opposite of restoring the feeling. And he does. Yeah. Now, look, I will give some credit here where credit is deserved. I am amused by him declaring Samoa Joe his best friend by proxy. That's kind of funny. And then, but the best, I love this part of the segment where Adam Page just punched him in the face.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
And that's what he should do to a geek character. And then it really broke down into chaos. And Dynamite needs chaos. Dynamite needs these little segments where it feels like stuff has gone kind of sideways, but like in a good way, because we have Joe and Paige getting in each other's faces and Roderick dying over here. Aubrey comes in because she's got a match between Roderick and Adam next. She's trying to keep peace, and I like this segment. I thought overall this was a good segment. Now, I know someone who like immediately buried it because it is tied into the MJF Devil storyline, and I cannot disagree with that at all. That storyline still, this is like the first good segment of this storyline, practically. You know, we've been doing this for what feels like 18 years at this point. Mm-hmm. So like, I can't exactly put this over as a shining example of like what AEW should be, but this was a good segment. It just happens to be connected with my least favorite storyline of this year and possibly the company's history.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. Even when it's good, it kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get ourselves a nice, not great Roderick Strong Page match. This felt a little disconnected at some points. It wasn't like they were on the same page in some ways. And, you know, it was kind of disappointing that way. But, I mean, it was still pretty good. I went 3.5 on it. I thought, you know, I mean, these guys are both good workers, and they could easily have a better match if they ran this back. But, yeah, you know, to his benefit, Roderick Strong is working his matches without any shtick. You know, there's no, like, stopping to scream or some kind of mid-match promo or any of this shit. It's just Roderick Strong doing backbreakers. And, you know, if we could get away further from the neck brace, screaming at him nonsense, that'd be all right with me. Next up, we had Brody King and Andrade. Shockingly, another good match. I didn't go too high on this. I went 3.75. It just didn't quite have that, you know, that little bit that would push into really great territory for me. But it was, it had some good stuff. It felt a little, it was not disjointed, but just very slow up until it wasn't. And it was a bit too much time, you know, in like second gear. But the end got wild. We had Andrade DDTing Brody King onto the turnbuckle and then hitting his hammerlock DDT for the win. And that was Brody King's first pinfall loss in AEW.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
They have done a really good job of protecting him. Even his losses, like the coffin match.
Right.
Wake Lake in 2022. Like, they've done a good job protecting him in singles, and I think that's good, but it also screams to part of the problems of AEW, where not even mid-carders are allowed to lose. And it's okay for Brody King to lose a match, but I guess, how many singles has he wrestled? Like, 10?
Maybe. Not very many. I can check real quick, but, I mean, I do think that, you know, one downside of the whole, like, Tony going, I have to protect everyone, is we get Brody, you know, guys like Brody don't get featured that much.
Yeah.
Brody, and, like, you know, I've come away from his performance in this tournament thinking that he, you know, there's no real reason to not treat him like a main eventer at this point. I thought he's been fantastic in this tournament and has looked, you know, looked like a killer. But yeah, as far as singles matches in AEW, match constellation. Let's get this on the old cage match. He has had 11 in totality, one of which was a dark match against, this is a hell of a name, Little Blay in Canada. I have never heard of Little Blay.
Can't say I have either.
I guess he's a local Canadian guy. Allow me to read you the other names that Little Blay has used. First of all, there's been Cody Blade, which is where the Blay comes from. And then Cody Swayze, Cody Youngblood, Cody 1-8. So I'm not sure if that's a Mario level or what. Best Avenger, number 6. El Handsomer, number 3. Gina Gomez, Caitlin Gomez, and P.S. Freedom.
Gonna be, interesting.
El Handsomer, number 4 for Halloween next year. Anyways, yeah, so Brody's only other single losses have, you know, was the Darby Coffin match. There was a Daniel Garcia win by referee's decision back on the St. Patrick's Day Slam Rampage before Daniel Garcia got memory hold for a while.
Yeah.
The DQ lost to Andrade, and he lost a world title match to Jon Moxley by referee's decision. So this would definitely be his first pinfall loss.
Just wild.
Yeah.
Good match. I enjoyed it. I gave it like 3 3/4.
That's what, look, I gave it.
One of my favorite moves in wrestling is Brody King doing the cannonball because he's awesome. Just so massive.
Yeah.
And it's like this giant, like, beefy Pillsbury Doughboy flying through the air and landing on a guy's face. Like, that just rules.
We've got ourselves a good cannonball era right now between him. Kevin Owens still does a good one. Willow Nightingale.
Yeah.
It's a cannonball time. Tyler, I hope you're ready to bury a segment because next up we had... And I think this may have been John Carroll who said this. They said that this segment was bad in the old way segments were bad in AEW, where it just felt very disjointed and kind of off the rails as compared to with just being stupid like the Adam Cole stuff was. And I thought that was a perfect way to break this down. The Golden Jets are in the ring, Tyler. And then Ricky Starks and Big Bill come out, and God bless, every wheel fell off this one. I thought this was one of the worst segments in a little bit, a couple weeks at least.
Breaking news. We are the Winnipeg Jets. Hold on. The Golden Jets.
Kenny Omega not knowing what team he's in.
I don't know if this came out earlier or if this was released. I had no idea that Big Bill and Ricky Starks beat the shit out of Chris Jericho at Full Gear.
Maybe we could get that video again. I love that Big Bill, wrong one. Big Bill did that beatdown while wearing his glasses. Like, it just has his readers on or whatever they are. That's my favorite part of it. It's that he's just trying to break this guy's arm while just wearing glasses. And it's just so funny to me for, you know, it's not something you usually see in wrestling. But, yeah, this segment was rough. You had some Chris Jericho tries to do 2002 WWE humor, like, you know, like you would do from his promos shortly after being Y2J, and it kind of flopped here. There were a couple of decent Enzo Amore references. Kenny Omega just looks absolutely checked out. He just does not seem like he wants to be out there. He might as well have had a wristwatch on and kept watching it. Ricky Starks is doing his damnedest to keep this on the rails, but then Chris Jericho starts offering names for their team, the Starks and Big Bill team, because they don't have a name. And these die a death, the absolute assholes, the Rick and the Dick. And then, hey, you could take one guy's last name and the other guy's first name, and you could have Big Billy Starks. And crickets. A quieter response than when CM Punk tried to reference hockey in his WWE re-debut promo.
Which is hilarious because he did it in a hockey town.
Yes. Even Ricky Starks on the mic immediately responds to that by going, "That one fell flat."
Look, Ricky's great, man.
And Ricky just goes into like full-blown Ricky mode at the end of this to try to save it. And he just starts doing his thing, and it's like 30 seconds, and he just goes into his little like rant style promo, and easily the best part of the segment, but man, this was a mess. They can't all be zingers, and this one sure wasn't.
It was very bad. Very bad.
Speaking of bad, we had Tony Storm come out and join commentary and add nothing of value. They have this idea for the gimmick that she's doing, but like they have no punchlines. It's a comedy gimmick without jokes. It is, you know, we're like basically a step away from her just doing the Adam Cole wacky faces, you know, like that kind of like, well, it's supposed to be funny. We don't have actual ideas for how it could be funny, but it's supposed to be funny. But this was during a Riho and Ruby Soho match, which I will say Ruby looked better than she has at other times in the recent past. But, you know, that's some damning with faint praise there. Riho, I think Tony Khan just randomly remembered that both Riho and Emi Sakura are under contract, because that's really what it kind of feels like. It's like, oh, I guess we could be using them. Yeah, I mean, Riho's good. I am very down on this Tony Storm's gimmick.
Yes.
And I just, you know, it ain't working. I just don't think it's working.
No, it's not.
Next up, we had a couple more C2 matches that were on the shorter side. I thought Rush and Jay Lethal was pretty good, but it was too short to really get really into.
Really put your teeth into it.
Yeah, I went 3 stars on that one. I did like the finish of Rush going for a sleeper and using a different move to get the win, especially immediately after he passed out in a choke by Jon Moxley. I thought that was a nice little bit of continuity there. And I do think we could get a story. We are going to get a storyline. We'll see if it's a good one. Jay Lethal just being extremely frustrated with himself by not winning any matches.
It's good.
Yeah. Like I said, this tournament should be a good way to launch up storylines, and I think that's one of the ones we're going to see. And then we got Jay White and Mark Briscoe, and this was a pretty damn good match. I went 4 stars on it. It was a little too slow at some points, like they were doing stuff, and then they would just kind of stop for 20 seconds or something, and it was kind of odd.
It kind of felt like a Jay White match.
Yeah, it was a Jay White match, yeah. I would definitely agree with that. But it was good. I mean, both these guys are good. And, you know, Jay White got his knees up on a froggy bow and turned into a Blade Runner to get the pin. I did like the series of counters down the stretch, which is definitely a Jay White match trope. But he always does them so well, I'm not going to complain about it. And this was another example of that.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued to see that Mark Briscoe-Jay Lethal match, which is going to determine who actually gets points in this tournament.
Yeah,
because neither one of those guys has a win. It also creates a really interesting dynamic because Rush has 6 points. And if he wins with some help, I believe he still has a shot to make the semis.
Yeah, and they could always do like a three-way match for you know, the semis if there's a tie. I wouldn't be shocked if they ended up doing that. And then our main event was John Moxley and Swerve Strickland, and these are two dudes right here, man. They are... John Moxley is just so confident. They're both so confident at this point in time, but John Moxley especially, like, he is clearly, and this is what's made him so special in AEW, he clearly feels himself as a main eventer. Like, and there's no, like, you know, getting forced into a position that he's not fit for. He is 100% a dude. And Swerve Strickland is, you know, this has been his year of ascent. I would be shocked if 2024 ends without him getting a world championship run. These guys had a hell of a match. Went 4.25 on it. Just some crazy stuff on there. I like the finish where Mox countered the JML driver to get the pin. And also, Swerve's shoulder may have been up, so they play that up on commentary. I think that's a nice touch here. I think that it's going to have to, you know, maybe not immediately, because we do know that AEW likes to do something and then 3 months later return to it with nothing really in between. And you're like, oh, okay, that did happen. You didn't really build off it, but it did happen. And I like this match quite a bit. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Good match. I gave it 4.5. You could just feel the sense at the end that they were building to something else. And I think that's great considering, like, this is like prelims, for lack of a better term. They're setting up for the semis and the finals. And I really liked it. I would love to see these guys in some sort of deathmatch element. Like, John Moxley versus Killshot. Let's go. Like, yeah. Man, there's more that they can do. And I'm excited to kind of see how that manifests. But look, this has been a very pro Swerve show for the entirety of his run in AEW. So I'm really excited to kind of see what happens here.
Yeah. And I think he's really stepped up his game this year. He looks like a star. He carries himself like a star. And he works like a star. And he talks like a star. If we can do away with this kind of comic book villain, like, cackling nonsense, you know, do any other house invasion gimmicks, which I don't think did anything to really help anything other than, well, okay, he didn't do anything to help Swerve. It got Adam Page to come back and be fiery, which Adam Page sorely needed. And
I think you don't want to swerve when you drive. No laughs.
Oh, I'm just popping you with the dance. So, you know, we know that podcasting is a visual medium.
It really is.
That's
a visual medium.
Just going to do it for the rest of the show. As backstage, the Devil's Rejects attacked Hangman Page in the parking lot.
This is an insult to Rob Zombie. Don't do this.
I'm rejecting them. So they're the Devil's Rejects. Page did get some fight back for a while, but then he the number game just overcame him. And while the Devil got out of the car to watch, Hangman Page was powerbombed onto the windshield of the car. And notoriously, Tyler, windshields are made with real glass.
Look, we've speculated that the Devil's Jack Perry before. We'll speculate that the Devil's Jack Perry again. This just adds more fuel to the fire.
Mm-hmm. It would be a smart... now, I still think the storyline sucks. They're not going to get me into this. There's just been too much shit. You can't go for 8 months, then give me, like, a good segment and a good, like, little, you know, fish hook there for me to be like, oh, this is good now. No, it doesn't. That's not how a good story works.
Yeah.
But I will say that that is a good fake out or a good tease either way. We'll see which way it goes. I'm just not gonna, like, be hyped about it. So
yeah, I'm with you. I'm not gonna be hyped either. We'll kind of find out how everything will manifest, and
I'm just excited for the end of this tournament, man.
I
really am.
Yeah, I think they've done a great job building it up, and I think it's really developing nicely, and I like it. I think they've done. There was a lot of pessimism, I should say, about it at first, but I think they've done a great job building this up and turning it into a source of storylines. It's up to them to deliver on those storylines, because I mean, we talked about Daniel Garcia earlier, we talked about Ricky Starks earlier. They have set up storylines with both of those guys and failed to deliver on them. Look, I really do think 2024, if you want, I think that if you want both those guys to stick around, you need to do some shit with them. You need to do some serious like stuff with them, and not just like the tag titles. Tag titles aren't bad, but that's not what you're looking for. And for Ricky Starks, and same with Daniel Garcia, you know, you got to do something meaningful with them. So,
and it's really hard because you have so many.
You do.
And this is part of the issue that WWE saw in the mid 2010s when they went to the indies and they signed all this great talent. At a certain point, you just don't have enough for all of these guys to be able to do something meaningful, even though it kicks ass that they're on your roster. So how is AEW now going to adapt and adjust? Because they're kind of in the same realm right now. They have signed a lot of really good talent, and most of the talent, you can't even argue that they shouldn't have signed. Mm-hmm. Like, even Adam Copeland has popped people in the buildings. He's done decent enough with ratings. Like, his match with Christian Cage last week on Dynamite was an incredible mover of ratings. Like, and I know we meme the one week where he literally did nothing for three shows, but his work has been really good in AEW, and I think people are responding to it. How much of that credit can be given to Christian Cage? We'll find out over time, because Christian Cage has been phenomenal in this company ever since he came in.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued to see how they adapt, because you're probably going to get the phasing out of Bryan Danielson, unfortunately. We just have to kind of deal with it as it is. Samoa Joe, if he doesn't win the title, is he going to stick around as a main character on these shows? That you have Hangman Page, who's done literally fucking nothing. Nothing.
For months at a time.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have, you just have too many cooks in the kitchen, and you have to kind of pick and choose who you want on your line. And AEW has a lot of talent, but, and a lot, 5 hours of TV time feels like a lot, and it's also nothing, because you have to have stuff for them to do with that 5 hours of TV time. I'd like to see Rampage utilize a little bit more within storyline. I think they're trying to, but right now it's just nerd matches. And yes,
please. Those are fun. I'm not going to complain about, you know, getting nerd matches, but yeah, I mean, it's very much a C show. And you know, the whole refusal to have stars lose, you know, when you really avoid it so much on TV, it's going to lead to this issue. And we've seen a lot of it in 2023, where you just, instead of having them occasionally lose matches, you just completely bench guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Lance Archer is on milk cartons at this point, you know, and he's still good. He's still a very talented guy. We talked about Starks. We talked about Daniel Garcia. You know, there's other guys on the roster that are very talented, and it's just the men's side is stuffed with talent, and the women's side is very interesting. But we had Miro not used for a long time, Andrade. I mean, there's a bunch of guys I can name off of their roster that just kind of disappeared. The House of Black, Wild Trios champions. Speaking of, the Acclaimed apparently have not recovered. They're just dead. We had Dustin Rhodes.
I like that they're keeping them off TV for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not complaining, really. It's just that the belts are on them. So it kind of, you know, I think.
Oh, good point.
I do think they have too many belts, but you know, it's not really a problem, but like, you know, when you go like a couple months without an appearance of them or mention of them, then it's kind of like, oh, well.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, you can go up and down the the roster, you know, like, and it's just going to get worse when like Kyle Fletcher returns, you know, when Mark Davis returns, when I'm going to say it, when Mark Quinn returns, because Isaiah Cassidy has turned himself into a damn fine worker, I think, carrying those Hardys matches. And then you got guys like the Hardys who think they need to be pushed more. And it's like, this is such I think they kind of burnt through their value pretty quickly there. I'll say that.
Hey, you know what? I'm glad Jeff seems to be on the right track, but
yeah,
man, at least we didn't get a Hardy Boys tag team title run.
Literally dodged a bullet there. So that's wrestling for AEW this week. Takes me to, well, Tyler, I got a little tab here pulled up entitled the 2023-24 College Football Bowl Game Schedule. Do you want to talk? You want to give the listeners a little football?
All right, let's do it. I want to say that I have the Texas State High School Finals on. There is an analyst on here. Her name is Ashley Pickle, and that is just a phenomenal name. Like, nice. You can't make that up. Ashley Pickle, that rocks. She's smart too. She kicks ass.
Cool, like, cool.
Just the name rules. I can't get over it.
Yeah. So there are, let's see, there are nine bowl games from now through Tuesday. I'm going to leave off the Thursday and Friday ones because who knows when we'll record next week. But I'm going to have you just give a little bit on each of them. You don't need to go fully in depth or nothings, but let's just talk about it a little bit because it's the most wonderful college football time of the year. And, you know, I mean, we got ourselves a full Saturday schedule alone by seven games. And they start at 11 a.m. with the Myrtle Beach Bowl with Georgia Southern and Ohio University.
I think Georgia Southern's going to win that game pretty easily. The tough part for Ohio is, like, their three best offensive players all entered the transfer portal. Curtis Rourke, the quarterback, is now going to Indiana, and that's going to be a really intriguing team next year. And Georgia Southern, they have a pretty prolific pass offense. It's been a little inconsistent, especially against some of the better defenses in the Sun Belt. Davis Brin, the quarterback, he threw five interceptions against Wisconsin earlier this year, and he's got 16 on the season. But Caleb Hood and Derwin Burgess Jr. are really talented weapons on the outside. If they can just get the ball in their hands consistently, I think Georgia Southern is going to be able to win this game. I think the line is 3 points right now, and I have Georgia Southern.
I will say that Ohio U does have, I believe, a damn strong defense. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find the SP Plus rankings, the latest version, but I think that could. This is definitely a strong defense versus a strong offense matchup, and the other side of the field kind of sucks on both ends. Yeah. I'm not expecting Ohio to really score any points here. Any players that people should watch out for if they're interested in the NFL?
Not really. You might get some guys who are UDFAs that will be preseason fun. I think Caleb Hood's one of those guys, wide receiver, Georgia Southern. Davis Brin could potentially be like an XFL type quarterback, but from an NFL perspective, no, not really.
All right, well, hit the bricks, guys. Tyler ain't got time for your shit. Our next game is the Cricket Celebration Bowl, where Howard versus Florida A&M playoff. Both teams are from, of course, the FCS. Howard is
HBCUs
the
HBCUs too.
Mm-hmm, Howard is the MEAC rep, and Jacksonville State is the SWAC.
Florida A&M, not Jacksonville State.
Oh, sorry, I misspoke there. I was looking down at the Knicks Bowl. Sorry, but instead of the playoffs, these two conferences participate in this bowl game every year. It's really interesting because the SWAC has kind of eaten some of the MEAC recently. Any thoughts on this game?
I'll be honest, I don't know much about either of these teams. I know Willie Simmons has done a phenomenal job at Florida A&M, and the atmosphere surrounding HBCU football is just different. It's kind of on the level of like Texas high school football. Like, there's a lot of passion, and not only a lot of passion, the marching bands are like the main event.
Yeah.
Florida A&M has one of the best marching bands
in the country. So halftime is going to be a must watch. Like, I'm probably not going to be having too much on this game personally, just because I'm not super invested in either team. And I really want to watch that Georgia Southern Ohio game. Plus, yeah, there's going to be other things going on that will just keep me away from it. But it should be a good football game, and the atmosphere will be incredible.
Yeah. A&M is 11-1 this year. Howard is 6-5. Kind of stole the MEAC over the 9-3 North Carolina Central. Florida A&M is favored by 7. And without pulling up the, you know, Bill Connolly's huge SP plus every level sheet, it does feel to me on the surface that line is not particularly kind to A&M. Meaning that I think they could easily cover that, I guess I should say. Mm-hmm. Not betting advice, though, just an observation, because I really don't know. The New Orleans Bowl is sponsored by R&L Carriers. Jacksonville State, who I tried to bring into the last game, is playing Louisiana. Ooh la la. Any thoughts on this one here, Tyler?
Jacksonville State, man.
Rich Rodriguez.
That Rich Rodriguez offense is fun. I like Malik Jackson a lot. Zion Webb is a talented quarterback. This could be a really fun football game. I don't think Louisiana's any good. I really don't. So I am betting heavy on Jacksonville State. And I don't know. Like, these are grimy bowl games, and I love it. I absolutely love it.
Louisiana they're 6-6, and they're ranked 64th in SP plus. Jacksonville State, which should not be eligible this year, but there weren't enough bowl eligible teams, so they got in, despite being in just their first year of FBS. They are 8-4 and ranked 67th. So they are, at least on paper, evenly matched.
I think the Jacksonville State is going to win this game by a touchdown.
It is a 2.5 spread with, I believe, Jacksonville State favored. So, but this is basically a home game for Louisiana, so that will keep it interesting. The Avocados from Mexico. I love the stupid, weird sponsors for these early bowl games. Miami of Ohio against Appalachian State at 3:30 p.m.
This is a really interesting one because Miami of Ohio, their starting quarterback, Brett Gabbert, his brother Blaine Gabbert was the top 10 pick of the Jaguars back in 2011. He hurt his legs out for the year. Avion Smith, their backup quarterback, just entered the transfer portal. So Miami team that just won the MAC is going to go in undermanned. But Appalachian State feels like they had half their roster into the transfer portal, including star running back Nate Noel, who I think could really be a massive benefit to a P5 team next season. I got Appalachian State because I think they're just going to have too much, especially on the defensive side of the football, to be able to kind of hold a Miami of Ohio team that's just going to be on their third-string quarterback. And it's bad enough being in your backup quarterback in the MAC. The third-stringer, don't feel too confident about that.
And Miami wasn't exactly slinging the ball around in the first place. They rank 107th overall in terms of offense and SP+. Interestingly, they are the best special teams team in the country this season, though, according to that metric. Overall, Miami is 52nd and App State is 55th on the year. A nice close one, but I do think that with the quarterback issues, it's probably an App State game. Again, anyone to watch in this game in particular?
Nobody's jumping out at me. You're going to see some really talented football players, but as far as like must watch from an NFL perspective, no.
Okay. Next up, the Isleta New Mexico Bowl with New Mexico State, the football powerhouse that is the 10-4 Aggies against the 8-4 Fresno State Bulldogs. This would be New Mexico State's fifth ever bowl victory. The headline says Fresno State playing for a missing head coach, which makes it sound like there's some mystery there.
Jeff Tedford,
but he's having left health the issues.
Program with health issues. I think it's heart stuff. Not 100% sure on that, but it's look it. And when you have a missing head coach, they're either going to all rally around him or they're going to collapse. And there's really no other way about it. I don't think that's going to matter with New Mexico State. New Mexico State went into Jordan-Hare Stadium and beat the piss out of Auburn the week before the Iron Bowl. Like, this is a good New Mexico State team. And if Diego Pavia, their quarterback, doesn't get hurt in the third quarter of that CUSA title game. They probably beat Liberty or at least make it much closer. Their third string quarterback made it a game, and he was slinging the ball over the field, but they lost by 14. It was at Liberty, so that matters a little bit. But New Mexico State has only won 10 games twice. 1960, they won 11, and this year they're 10-4. So New Mexico State, all factors considered, you have a healthy Diego Pavia. Yes, they lose their second best wide receiver to the transfer portal, but Jerry Kill's going to have these guys ready to go. It's basically a home game. Fresno State's been so up and down this year. They lost to, I think, Nevada or New Mexico is one of the two, and both those teams stink. So I'm going to take New Mexico State, and I'm not going to think twice about it.
Yeah, this is the second time in history New Mexico State is in consecutive bowls. Last time they did it was 59-60. Per SP Plus, this is a very tight matchup. New Mexico State ranked 62nd and Fresno State 63rd. Jerry Kill, who's not exactly a beloved person, I think, in general, is at least doing well as the New Mexico State coach. The LA Bowl brought to you by Gronk.
Hell yeah. This used to be the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl, by the way.
Gronk is much cooler. They should. I just think that random celebrities should sponsor bowl games more often. Let's have like a LeVar Burton Bowl next year. Why not?
Eating Rainbow Bowl.
Yeah, an extremely weird matchup here, I think, with UCLA, who actually had, despite going 7-5 on paper, a fantastic defense and like a fine offense against Boise State and their interim coach and their conference championship.
No longer interim coach. They gave him the job.
Oh, they gave him the job. Well, if you win the conference championship as a interim coach, I think that's probably a good decision. Just really weird season for Boise State. I mean, they fired their coach, and then they 4 weeks later, they rallied and won the championship. I think that's a hell of a story right there. These teams are also very similar in SP+. UCLA at 38, Boise State at 41. Any other thoughts here?
I'm really excited to watch this game. UCLA, they kept having a quarterback carousel. They couldn't really make a decision. True freshman Dante Moore, top three recruit in the country at the quarterback position, true dual threat. I thought he really fit well in that Chip Kelly offense. But then you had Ethan Garbers, who more of a traditional dropback passer, and Chip Kelly makes it work for those guys. He did so in the NFL. He has done so at UCLA. I really like his arm talent. And then you have Colin Schley, who's just a broad spectrum of fun. And one of Garbers or Schley is going to play a lot in this game, maybe both of them. And then Carson Steele, the running back, he looks like a 25-year-old factory worker out of the guts of Ohio. Like, just the dude, like, you got to read the freaks list right up on Carson Steele. He can just lift some fucking weight, man. And the dude is a stud. I'm kind of excited to see this. I picked UCLA. That defense is really, really good, and you don't have a lot of opt-outs from it. Laiatu did not opt out for this game as of yet, and I mean, there's still time, but I don't think he's going to. And the Gabriel and Grayson Murphy are awesome as well. That pass rush is going to be able to get home. And no Taylen Green for Boise State. And to me, that was a big factor as well. He just committed to Arkansas, and not having him is going to be a massive impact for that Boise State offense. And I just don't think they're going to have enough.
All right. And finally, the Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl in Shreveport between California and Texas Tech.
Jaden Ott, the running back from Cal, just released the coolest fucking video of all time a couple hours ago. He basically sits down, and most players will do a graphic. Well, he did a video thanking everybody at Cal, and then he says, "I'm entering the transfer portal." He goes out of the screen. He's like, "Nah, I'm just playing. I'm coming back." And then they just do a highlight package, and it's just cool, cool shit. Cal and Texas Tech is an interesting one. Jake Spavital, the offense coordinator for Cal, really helped that offense lead like a renaissance. He was the Texas State head coach, returned to Cal this year to be OC. Now he's at Baylor. So that plays a little bit in here. Cal has kind of had a little bit of a quarterback carousel, mainly due to injuries. And I think Texas Tech is going to be able to win this game. Taj Brooks is playing in the bowl game. He's coming back next year. Was an absolutely lethal back in the Big 12. And Baron Morton is kind of getting his bearings underneath him as the quarterback in that Zach Kittley air raid. And I think they're just going to be too much for Cal in this game. I don't think they're going to have enough to be able to stop them. And that's going to be big for me.
There you go. You got anything on the FCS semifinals? Friday night is Albany at South Dakota State. What a trip. And then Saturday is North Dakota State at Montana.
Albany, South Dakota State could be fun. I think South Dakota State's going to end up winning. If it's a bad weather game, watch for Albany to make some noise, kind of like Villanova did last week.
That is 7 p.m. tonight.
Yeah. 6 Central if you're me. Montana, NDSU is going to be great. NDSU going to Montana is a one-point favorite.
That's an unseeded team.
Yeah, well, it's NDSU. They had some health issues during the season. They lost to South Dakota, who they just avenged their loss by just absolutely destroying them in the quarterfinals. They lost to South Dakota State. And I can't remember who their third loss was. Oh, they lost to North Dakota. All three playoff teams. North Dakota was also unseeded. They lost in the first round to Sacramento State. But they did get a home game out of it. So they were at least like a top 16 seed out of the 2014 field. Look, NDSU's championship pedigree, 9 national titles since 2011. And 2010, they got screwed out of it, a final appearance, because of a bad call by the refs. I lived in Fargo at the time. It was bad, real bad.
Fortunately, college refs will never make another bad call.
I know. Look, Montana's fun, man. That defense is great. That offense is multiple, and they can do a lot of things, especially with their quarterback. I can't remember his name, but the number 17 is a true dual threat. And look, if Bozeman has some incredible aesthetics, because you got the mountains in the backdrop, high recommend checking that game out on Saturday afternoon. That is going to be one that I am going to be glued to.
All right, and then we get ourselves a Monday afternoon, 2:30 p.m. Eastern bowl game. Hell yeah. At the Jerry Richardson Stadium on the Charlotte campus. The famous Toastery Bowl between Western Kentucky and Old Dominion. I love a weekday afternoon bowl.
Oh, I love weekday afternoon bowls, man. I'm a big Western Kentucky guy. I like the Hilltoppers. I actually need to go onto their NIL shop and buy a t-shirt just because I do really enjoy that team. Big Red is one of the coolest mascots. They actually had a Big Red helmet this year.
Yeah, with special decals for each position group, too.
Yeah, it was great. I wish they would sell the mini helmets. Look, Austin Reed has been inconsistent this year. He was way more consistent in 2022, and I really thought that he could make some noise as a potential draft prospect with a good 2023. Malachi Corley being hurt for a little bit of the year. Dalvin Smith got hurt, their second wide receiver, and their third wide receiver, Michael Matheson, who was my fifth-round pick in the 50-team college fantasy football extravaganza, didn't play a single snap, had a hip injury. They're just like, oh, he's week to week, and they figured he'd be back in October. Oh, I just didn't play. So Reed, he's a true gunslinger, and in that air raid, it's some tight windows, and he did throw some interceptions, but he can light it up as well. I'm intrigued to see them against this Old Dominion team. Old Dominion's got a good offense. This should be fun. I've got Western Kentucky. Look, if you're not doing anything on a Monday afternoon, great use of your time.
Yeah, always fantastic background stuff. And then our last one, the Scooter's Coffee Frisco Bowl. I just love these dumb sponsors. Half of them sound like they're probably just military contractors, and the other half are just like the most random food brands. And then you got Gronk. We have in Frisco, Texas, you have UTSA against the morally superior and just Marshall Thundering Herd.
Listen, I wouldn't say that, but I do like...
I will always say that because that's my team, man.
Yeah, I do like their head coach, Charles Huff, just basically being real about NIL. And yeah, do you want to necessarily say that? No, nothing he said was incorrect. And I think that's something that's going to be lost a little bit in translation with some of these things. Look, UTSA, Frank Harris's last game with the Thundering Herd, he's probably going to absolutely torch Marshall. and going UTSA to win big.
Yeah, I would expect that to be the outcome too, as much as I don't want to say that, but it does look like statistically that's what's going to happen. And those are the bowl games right now. We'll talk about some more next week if we have time. I think we want to do a do you want to do next week as the year in review on AEW, and then the following week we can focus on the pay-per-view?
I like that.
Sounds good to me. I will leave us with one more wrestling comment. Somebody post AEW uploaded for, looks like, the entire Golden Jets Ricky Starks Big Bill segment for some reason to their YouTube, and someone posted on there, it takes a lot of courage to upload this segment. Kudos to the social media manager.
You know what, we've made fun a lot about the social media team. That rules. That absolutely rules.
Oh, that's our show this week. Follow Tyler's football stuff. He's one of the best at it. He's just so smart and knowledgeable about every football team that's ever existed. And I hope you all have a great week. Do the outro stuff, Tyler.
Like, comment, subscribe, do all the fun things. Help us grow. I'm sorry we didn't have Dave Meltzer again on this show this week, but we hope to get him back soon and have another episode like we did last week, which was very well received by everybody we talked to. And I thought it was really cool to hear Dave in a different element, and we're going to try and give you that again. And help us out. Like, comment, subscribe. That's the easiest way to do so. And if you want, you can always give us money with the donation link in the show notes. Thank you. God bless. Take care.
See y'all.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne. In every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.